Omaha Public Radio presents another program for Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. We'll hear the conclusion of a talk by Dwayne Hollowhorn Bear, Lakota language, history, and cultural instructor at St. Agleska University in Mission, South Dakota. Mr. Hollowhorn Bear's topic is Lakota creation stories and spirituality. His remarks were given as part of Metropolitan Community College's celebration of Native American Heritage Month. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday morning, November 9, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Metropolitan Community College, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. To summarize the first half of the program, through the influence of his grandmother and grandfather, Mr. Hollowhorn Bear grew up speaking and preserving his native Lakota language. He also kept alive the traditional creation stories of the Lakota people. He began his presentation by telling the story of the creation and how the earth became corrupt and the importance of the sweat lodge ceremony in the Lakota culture to cleanse and purify the world and ourselves. He also talked about his life story, including his education at boarding schools on the Rosebud Indian Reservation, being helped by a Jesuit priest, and spending the summers with other Lakota people in Madison, Wisconsin. He acquired skills as an auto mechanic, but after enlisting in the Army, was sent to Vietnam to serve in a construction unit. After returning from Vietnam in 1971, he was stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs, Colorado. He discovered the American Indian Movement, tried to reconnect with his Lakota heritage, and was court-martialed and imprisoned for desertion. However, he was pardoned by President Ford at the same time he pardoned Richard Nixon. After his release, he earned a degree in automotive mechanics from a vocational education school in Dallas, Texas, and ultimately returned to work at St. Francis Boarding School in South Dakota as a bus driver and mechanic, where he stayed for 10 years. Here now is Dwayne Hollowhorn Bear in the conclusion of Lakota Creation Stories and Spirituality.
But Vietnam turned me into a drug addict and an alcoholic. So it took me from 1974 till 1980 to finally figure out that I wasn't living right. I had to come back to my spirituality. I had to come back to my ceremonies. And it took something tragic to make me realize that. I went to see a medicine man. And he said, let's see what we can do. And he helped me with the situation that I had. I went to him after the ceremonies and I said, Joe, I want to give you something. I want to pay you for helping me. He says, no, it's okay. It's all right. I says, Joe, I really need to give thanks. I want to thank you for it. He says, no, I'm not the sacred one. I'm just to what individual that's in between. I'm the interpreter. You need to thank creation. Well, how do I do this? He said, is this what you want to do? I said, I really honestly feel I need to give thanks. He helped me to prepare. And June the following year, he took me out to the wilderness and he put me up on top of a hill with my pipe and he said, stay here until I come back for you. No problem. I just got back from Vietnam. There's no VC in these woods until I heard a coyote somewhere behind me. And I stood up on that hill shaking, thinking, what the hell am I doing out here? I was scared. I didn't know if I could do it. I had to go through all of that fear. Each time that coyote sang a song, I sang one just as loud to let him know I was out there too, all night long. The next day, the heat. In our spirituality, we say the only thing that we can only, the only thing that we can say we truly, honestly own is this body that we are in. We are spirits on a humanistic journey. One day, this body is going to lie down, but the spirit will never die. And so this is what we sacrifice. We cleanse it in the sweat lodge. We sacrifice up on the hill. No food and no water. I went for 4 days and four nights. Giving thanks, singing. Third day, I was getting cotton mouth. I couldn't swallow, couldn't spit, was dehydrated. It's at this point when the grandfathers used to say, someone's going to come to see you. Perhaps in the form of the eagle, or the elk, or the wolf, or the fox, or the horse, maybe even the bear, or perhaps even the little mouse. Stay awake. Be ready. I am so ready. But instead, I began to reminisce about my life. When our father took us to the boarding school system, put us in boarding school and said, take care of your little brother. My whole life played out like a movie in my mind all through the night. I remembered as little boys when the bigger boys used to beat me up, when I used to beat the little boys up. And happy times, good times. Then at nights, I couldn't hear little boys crying themselves to sleep. There was nights that I had to sleep with my little brother so he wouldn't cry all night. And I'd get punished the next day because I wasn't in my own bed. And so my whole life, high school, Vietnam, I'm still dealing with that. I don't think I'll ever get over that. So by this time, I seen the sky turning a pinkish purplish color. I knew the sun was coming up. So I turned to the east and I saw the morning star. And I sang the morning star song. After I finished singing that song, a little speck like a little star took off from the morning star and shot across the northern sky over, and I was my, what was that? I looked to see if there was going to be another. I waited, what was that? And then I stood there looking to the east as the morning star began to fade away because the sun was starting to rise. And when those sun rays crest the horizon, they hit my eyes. I broke down and started crying. And I cried. And I cried. I don't know if I cried all day long, but I just cried and cried and cried. I wanted to live. I wanted to live so badly. But I wanted some happiness in my life. But I realized I had to forgive. I had to forgive. Down the road here, off of I-80, just west of us, in a city called Ogallala, just right north of there, Lake Maconaghy, there's a little creek, a place called the Blue Water. In 1851, the government realized they were having a difficult time with the Lakota people, so in 1851 they made a treaty with the Lakota, recognize our territorial boundaries, only requesting a rite of passage to get across our territory, because what had happened on the West Coast was in 1949 was the gold rush. But we were trying to stop them because they were just senselessly murdering all of the buffalo by the millions. They made a peace bond with us, asking us not to harass the white people. In 1854, a wagon train of LDS, the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, was coming across there. There was a Lakota village that was sitting there, a leader by the name of Conquering Bear. This wagon train, there was a cow tied to the back of this wagon. It's tethering, it's bobbing its head, and it broke that tether, and it ran off into that Lakota village. The owner's notified, saying, "Your cow ran into that village." He checked his livestock, and he said, "Oh, I know which one you mean. It's okay. That one was going lame. It would never have made it to where we're going. It's all right." He gets back on and rides off. So the Lakota, gee, if he doesn't want his cow, let's have a feast, because the buffalo were scarce. They were getting harder and harder to find. And so they slaughtered the buffalo, and they had a feast. Word got down the road to the original owner of this cow. He came running back, and he demanded his cow back after he didn't want it. Conquering Bear said, "That prime cow is worth $10. When our treaty compensation comes in, I will give you $20. "No, I want that, the man who killed my cow." He got the army involved, a young lieutenant just out of West Point, Lieutenant Grattan. "I'll straighten these Indians out." He pushed a little too hard. A battle ensued. His whole command was wiped out. Conquering Bear was wounded. He died from his wounds. The Army War Department notified Harney, who had retired, went to Paris, France, and brought him back. "Go out there and take care of the Indian problem." The leader at this time was Little Thunder. Harney came out and said, "Little Thunder, you Indians are giving the white people another hard time. They sent me out here, so you and I are going to have a fight. Prepare yourself for battle." Little Thunder said, "Look up there." On his teepee pole, he says, "You know what that means. There was a white flag. We are at peace with the United States Army. Little Thunder, I didn't come out of here for nothing. You prepare yourself for battle." He went back to his command. Told his dragoons, "Close the back door. They run down the valley. We got them." 5 a.m. September 3rd, under a white flag, Major Harney attacked Little Thunder's camp, killing men, women, and children. Another lieutenant by the name of Lieutenant Warren, commissioned by the George High Foundation out of New York City, which eventually became the Smithsonian, which is now the National Museum of the American Indian, commissioned Lieutenant Warren, "I want artifacts. Get me artifacts." Lieutenant Warren wanted to become an artifact collector, started taking two of everything, one for George High and one for himself, taking clothing off of dead women and children. 5 wagon loads of goods rode over the hill. Further search of the camp, they found a 4-year-old little boy still alive. Now, if this little 4-year-old boy had been taken by the army and shipped out east and adopted into a white family, I wouldn't be standing here today. That 4-year-old boy grew up to become my great-grandfather, Chief Hollow Horn Bear. So that is my history. That is why at the university I am so avid into teaching history and culture, because our young people need to know their history of what had happened to us. Not from Western civilization's history books, but from the Lakota perspective. The history needs to be heard. And so that's my role amongst my people. Up on that hill, I had to forgive that Blue Water Massacre. I had to forgive Little Bighorn. Wounded Knee 1, Wounded Knee 2. I had to forgive this Catholic priest who had a point when I was in boarding school. I was a young boy. They used to show movies in the auditorium. They sold popcorn for a dime. I didn't have a dime. They gave us apples, and so I split my apple in half. Take this one to the movie. I'm going to nibble on that while the movie's on. As we were going out of the dining room, he decided to start searching the boys to see if we were taking silverware out of the dorm, out of the dining room. He found that apple in my pocket, and he became very angry with me, slammed it into a trash can. I want to see you after lineup. I was shaken. I avoided him. Didn't want to make eye contact. We lined up. We started going, oh, he forgot. Good, he forgot. I was praying that he would forget as we were going towards the gymnasium. He was standing by the door, and he yanked me out of line. I told you I wanted to see you after lineup. He was the high school boys' matron, the dorm matron. He took me up there, and he went into his room. He came out with a huge board wrapped with adhesive tape. Drop your pants. Your underwear, too. And he wailed on me 50 times. I was screaming. I needed to go bathroom. But he had to get his 50. I urinated on myself, screaming. I couldn't lay on my back or sit down for I don't know how long. But up on that hill, I had to forgive. If I wanted to have happiness in my life, I had to forgive. And so I forgave. On day 4, I figured the evening, it's my 4th day, Joe should be coming any time for me. It started getting dark, and I thought, oh no, he forgot where he put me. He's not coming. I'm dead. But I had to dig deep. I had to dig deep, and I can do another night. But instead, I was reminiscing again. In the 70s, before I came back to the spirituality after Vietnam, I was doing a lot of beer drinking. I pulled up at this liquor store, and there was this ugly-looking van standing there. Had starfish and whales and all kinds of stuff painted on it. So I walked into the liquor store, and there's this young white man faced the other way. He's getting himself 2 6-packs of beer. When he turns around, I say, hey, buddy, is that your van out there? He says, yeah. I said, what are you? Are you a hippie? He says, some people call us that. I says, hey, listen, I'm going to get myself a case of beer. I want to know more about this hippie craze thing. You want to share a few beers? He said, sure, why not? I kept him for a whole week. Kept him at my place and visited with him. And he said, I got to get going back out to New Hampshire. But I'm going to come back through in August. I said, sure, come on back. When he came back, he was digging in his van, and he came into a house with a piece of paper. Dwayne, read this. I read it and talked about a chief and the description of a pipe and the location where it was. He said, who is this? I said, that's my great-grandfather. Dwayne, you need to get this pipe back. It belongs to your people. He said, yeah, right. What am I going to do with a pipe? Give me another damn beer. I remember this young man when I was up there on that hill. I jumped to my feet and I screamed out to my great-grandfather's spirit's hand, I know where your pipe is and I'm coming for it, but I need your help. I need some guidance. I came off of that hill. The next morning, Joe finally found me. And I went back to the sweat lodge. He gave me a cup of broth and said, just wet your mouth. Don't swallow it all too fast. You're going to hurt yourself. You've been without food and water for 4 days and 4 nights. Just sip on it. And rest in here. Sleep in the lodge. I slept in there all day. That night, we put up another ceremony, and I revealed everything I experienced up on that hill. But I told Joe, but Joe, nobody came. He said, what? Nobody came. He said, no one was supposed to come. You said you wanted to give thanks. Did you give thanks? I said, yeah. What else? I found myself. Well, that's what this is about. The next day, I came back and I said, Joe, I got paid while I was up on the hill. I want to split my check with you. No, I'm okay. It's all right. You gave thanks. That's all that was needed to be done. Joe, please let me do this. You see that old pickup I got out there? I want you to have it. I rebuilt the engine since I went to automotive school. I was a certified mechanic. Transmission's good. The tires are fair. Body's old, but it runs real good. Yeah, I could use a pickup. I said, come on, I'll get you some gas. Brought him down to Valentine, Nebraska, filled up the tank, had lunch with him, bought him some groceries, and I took him home. As he put things away, he gave me a cup of coffee, and he sat down. He looked at me and says, Joe, I need your help again. He says, yeah, I know. I said, Joe, would you teach me these ways? Would you teach me these ways so I can understand what the hell happened to me up there on that hill? Teach me these ways so that I can help you to help other people the way you helped me. And that he accepted. And he became my mentor for up to 10 years. Up until he died. I traveled extensively with him. All over the United States, Germany, Canada. I learned his altar. I learned his songs. I set up his altar for him. I committed my life to him. I told my job, if this man calls me day or night, I'm going. They said, just get two standbys. Two standbys. If he calls you, you get hold of one of these two standbys to step in for you. Then you can go. And I had that all arranged. So up until he died, and then I says, it's gone. It's all over now. I'm always losing them. My Uncle Albert says, it's not all gone. Now you're going to have to start living everything that he taught you in 10 years. And so, by the way, that my great-grandfather's pipe that I was talking about, 7 years after I was up on that hill, that sacred pipe of my great-grandfather came home on its own. I have it in my home. And we have conducted 21 Sundances since its return. It's called the Hollow Horn Bear Sundance on our reservation. I was working under a school bus when someone was kicking my feet. I crawled out from under that bus and it was the vice president of St. Igloshka. It was still a college at the time before it became a university. And she said, Duane, you're really wasting yourself under that school bus. I don't know what you're talking about. It pays my bills. It feeds my kids. That's not what I'm talking about. I have people at the college who have PhDs, who have masters, got their bachelors, but none of them can teach what Joe taught you in these 10 years. I need you at the college. I'm not a teacher. How did Joe teach you? What does this place pay you? I could go up a few thousand higher than that, so I kind of bumped it up a couple myself. Then I went to the college in 1991. Two and a half years ago, it took me 15 years. One stipulation, she said, every semester, with your teaching load, you take two classes. And it took me 15 years. But 2 years ago, my wife and I, in St. Igloshka University's graduation line, we stood and we both got our BAs. I got a BA in Lakota History and Culture, Lakota BA in Lakota Language Research, and my beautiful wife got her BS in elementary education. But she won't leave the library. She loves that job. But we did it. Well, I did it. That dream that I started back there in high school of wanting to become a teacher, it took me that long. I got that. I became an educator. That was the message I always give to you, the young people. If you ever have a dream of what you want to aspire to be in life, don't ever give up on that dream. Don't ever. You don't have to do it the way that I did it. Please don't do it that way. But don't give up on your dreams. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And along with it, you got to use your spirituality. You've got to work on four aspects of your life in the spirituality. This physical being, that's your spirit on a humanistic journey. Your emotional aspect, learning to have compassion so that you can be happiness. Your mental aspect, acquiring the knowledge of what that mitakuyase concept really means. It's easy to put a t-shirt on that says mitakuyase on it, or stick a bumper sticker on the back end of your car, mitakuyase. Try living it. Try living it every day, day in and day out. And your spiritual aspect, always knowing that you're a spiritual being and that other people are spiritual beings too, and treat each other in that way. So, and these ceremonies that are listed here give us those opportunities to address that, because in Lakota spirituality, we know that life is hard. This is why we go back to the sweat lodge. When you're having difficult times, things are coming down on you, and you go there. You purge yourself inside that lodge with those red hot stones. We work with the elements of creation, of nature. Fire, earth, water, and air. All of these elements together in that ceremony. These are all our relatives. It was in the late 70s when I was back, another president. In 1978, who's a history buff? Who knows their presidents? 1978. Jimmy Carter. He signed into law the Native American Freedom of Religion Act, openly giving us the right to practice these rituals openly and freely. Before, they were underground, they were being done in secrecy, being done out in the wilderness. And now they surfaced. A lot of people came back to these ways. They started leaving the churches. The priest would come in, stand at his podium with his big book, ready to start the sermon. He used to have a few standing room only. Pretty soon he was looking like this. There was a lot of empty chairs. Where is everyone? We need to get started here. One man raised his hand. Father, they're going back to their sweat lodges. They're going back to the hilltops. They're going back to the sun dances. The priest says, we need to do something about this. After Mass that Sunday, he calls the Episcopalian priests over in Mission. I'm having a dilemma. I'm losing the people. What's it like over there? He said, same thing. We need to sit down and talk, strategize what we can do to bring these people back. Let's call a conference. St. Ignatius College had a Lakota Medicine Man and Spiritual Leaders Associate organization. They were invited to sit in on this conference. And so for days they debated, they argued, they talked about the pros and the cons of religion versus spirituality, back and forth, back and forth. And finally one old priest gets up and he bangs on the table and gets everyone's attention. Okay. So in your Lakota spirituality, you are saying that you can see the spirit. You're saying that you can hear the spirit. And you say that you talk to the spirit. Is that what you are telling us? This medicine man sitting close by, he says, Father, exactly. For years, yes. Yes, that's what we've been trying to tell you. Okay. Now, all right. Not to be outdone, he says, Tell me then, what does Satan look like to you? The old man nudged the one next to him. He says, maybe you ought to explain this. He's talking about your brother-in-law. He said, Father, you really disappoint us with this question. Why is that? Father, we've been coming to these meetings hoping perhaps that you could tell us what Satan looks like, because you're the one who brought him out here. Father, take a good look at me. Take a good look at yourself and everyone else in this room. That idea of Satan exists in every single one of us, just as powerful as the idea of God exists in each and every one of us. We, as the two-legged, the human species, have been given a wonderful, powerful gift to make a decision which one we are going to use to develop our life. And whatever decision we make, that is our decision. For years, I've been blaming my brother-in-law for getting me drunk, and here, now you tell me the devil made me do it. So, you know, Father, when the missionaries first came out here, you came out with this big book. Taught me all about this God. Taught me all about this man named Jesus. Said this Jesus could walk on water. He could take water and he could change it into wine. He could heal the sick. I used to lay in bed at nights before I go to sleep wondering, thinking, wow, this Jesus, he must have been a powerful medicine man to be able to do those things. You know, when I tell you that I can see the spirit is when I look at my wife, I look at my grandchildren, I look and I see the red-tailed hawk or the eagle. I see the horses out there. When I hear the spirit, I could hear my little 3-year-old grandson, 4-year-old grandson crying. I could hear the red-tailed hawk scream. But when I talk to the spirit, I'm talking to my children, my grandchildren. I talk to my wife. I'm talking to you. Because the Spirit is in you. We do not separate the Creator from creation. You do this. You say God made everything, therefore God is in everything, but yet you put him as an unseen being. Put your woes in the hands of God. Okay. And if I screw up, I can blame the devil, right? That's a cop-out. I am responsible if I screw up. Or pat myself on the back if I did a good job. That decision is mine and mine alone. I got no one else to blame. That is that concept of Mitake Oyasi. This is why in time when I've made 29 trips in 15 years to Italy, in 2001, I made a request. No, in 99 I made a request. Because I'm also a traditional chief amongst my people. And I was having conferences with mayors, provincial presidents, and they were signing documents. Because we know this United States government is never going to give us back sovereign recognition as a sovereign nation of people. But these other countries around the world, they're saying, you fit all the criteria. You have land base. You have your own tribal government, traditional government. You have your language. You fit all of the criteria to be a sovereign nation of people. We recognize you. And they signed a declaration saying they would recognize us. He says, I'm honored and I thank you, but there's only one other person whose recognition I would like to receive. This mayor of Murano, he said, who might that be? Papa Giovanni. You want to meet with Papa Giovanni? He says, yeah, I want to have an audience with Pope John Paul. So the Italian people there, they had about a 15-20 minute conference, and they came back and says, you know, the bishop from our area, if we were to draft a letter and get it to this bishop, he could see that the key people in the Vatican would get your letter. So we put together a letter. But a letter of denial came back. Sent another letter. Each and every time, a letter of denial would come back. And so, 2.5 years later, I'm over there, and my hostess, she says, you see the man standing by the door over there? He absolutely insisted he has to sit down and talk with you. He speaks English. I said, I'll talk with him. He sits down with me and he opens up a folder. These are all copies of the letters you wrote to the Vatican requesting audience with Pope John Paul. These are all copies of the letters that were sent to you explaining to you why you cannot visit with Pope John Paul. Pope John Paul only visits with dignitaries and ambassadors from recognized nations, and you are not. But you're going to continue to write, aren't you? I said, yes, I am. You are so well known over here in Italy. You're in the news. You're on TV. Whenever you're in country, the Vatican knows. They knew you were here. They sent me to come to talk to you and ask you, what is it that is so important for you to say that you're going to continue to write? I explained to him that I studied the Pope. I liked his Pope. And I said, I found out that him and his own people were not a recognized nation for 200 years. But they hung on to their traditions, their cultures, and their language. And they came back 200 years later and were recognized as a nation of Poland. But I need to talk to him and tell him that my people cannot wait 200 years. We are losing, and we are losing fast. And I've watched him when he went around the world. I watched him on the internet when he went to South Africa, when he went to Cuba, when he went to South America. And I listened to him when he tells these countries, recognize your indigenous peoples. When will he say something on behalf of the indigenous peoples of North America? He couldn't answer me. 3 days later, he calls me and said, Wednesday morning, 6 a.m., be at the gates of the Vatican. You're going in. I did it. And I went in and I explained to him and I asked him to recall the papal bulls. He says, no, that was decreed by Jesus. That is our work. The papal bulls, I can't remember how that goes, but it was given to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabel in 1492. Send your emissaries out into the world. Since Christopher Columbus has proven that the world is not flat and we're going to fall off, it's round, to every mainland, every continent, every island, and bring them savage barbarians back to the one true church. Christianize the world. We're asking you to recall these papal bulls because we have our spirituality and it works just as well for us. It's just as good. I believe there was a man named Jesus that walked this earth, but he was given to these people over here. We were given from the Buffalo Nation, from the white buffalo calf woman, this sacred pipe that we use in our spirituality. And it works very well for us. So, but he couldn't do it. So I asked a special mass for my people. Daddy said he could do. He said if I should ever have the opportunity to come to America again, I would like to visit an Indian reservation. Please come to mine. Unfortunately, his health wasn't good, and he never made it. They asked me if I wanted an audience with this new pope. But I says, I need to watch him for a while, see where his views are on, you know, human rights. He's already offended the Muslims with some of the remarks that he's made. The things I do for my people, not only through spirituality, but for the young people. I talk to the high schools, I talk to the young people about language, about their history and their culture, and they're just not interested. One day my son comes home. Hey son, I learned a beautiful ceremonial song we can use in the sweat lodge ceremony. I want to teach you. When, Ate? How about this evening? Ate, there's a program on TV. My friends are all talking about it. There's a rerun this evening. I want to see it. So, okay, we'll do it another time. I said, what channel is your program on? Oh, it's on MTV. I said, all right. He said, watch it with me. So that evening I watched MTV with him. Found it very interesting. I called friends in Los Angeles and Van Nuys. There's an MTV office. Get me names, get me numbers. I called them and said, I saw a very, very interesting segment of your program. I'll tell you what, I'm Native American. If you should ever need some input from Native American on one of your programs, give me a call. I'll help you. I think about 3 or 4 months later, they called and said, were you serious about that offer? I says, yeah. Well, can you come to Sedona, Arizona? So my wife is Navajo from the, I took her home to visit her mother and went on to Sedona. Worked with 6 college kids. So can you help them face their fears? So, yeah, I could do that. So the next morning, 5 in the morning, we go back in these red rocks. And they're airing up 2 hot air balloons. Between these baskets on these hot air balloons, there's a plank, 18 feet long, 18 inches wide, tied to each basket. They both put 3 of these college kids with their pilot on each side, and they float up, and they're floating down towards Phoenix. Just north of Phoenix at a place called Cave Creek, they hover. And at 2,500 feet, of course with the safety line on, one college kid would walk across that plank over to the next basket. The other one would come over here, and one would go over there until all 3 had exchanged baskets. And when they landed, I wore my regalia, and I talked to them about them being in the realm of the eagle. Told them some cultural stories and helped them tie that skull on the front end of their RV. And told them, you go to Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff Student Cafeteria, you'll find an envelope with an MTV crew on it. That's your next clue where you to go. Who knows what I'm talking about? Road rules. Road rules. MTV road rules. Segment number 9, face your fears. So now when I come back to the reservation, I go up by the high school. The high school kids say, it's him. He's the one, he's on MTV. Hey, uncle, grandpa, how did you do that? How did you get to be on MTV? This is a wonderful, powerful gift. If you use it in the right way, something positive, you can make things happen. You could change this world into be a positive, spiritual world. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a program from Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. We've heard the conclusion of a talk by Dwayne Hollowhorn Bear, Lakota Language, History, and Cultural Instructor at St. Agleska University in Mission, South Dakota. The title of Mr. Hollowhorn Bear's presentation has been Lakota Creation Stories and Spirituality. His remarks were given as part of Metropolitan Community College's celebration of Native American Heritage Month. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday morning, November 9th, 2009, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Barbara Velasquez, Coordinator of International and Intercultural Education at Metropolitan Community College, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.